Now, frequency may not be the only, or is not the only way of comparing imaging systems. Contrast is important too, and the visibility of objects in terms of contrast. And for that, some authors have proposed what is called the contrast detail curve, based upon experiments with images of objects of varying thickness. In X-ray imaging, a thick object will attenuate X-rays more than a thin object of the same material. And there are phantoms made with aluminum or copper or gold, where you take little strips of the metal of varying thickness and arrange them in some order. You could make little discs or circular cut like coins of different thickness of the same metal, arrange them in some order and take an X-ray image. As the thickness is reduced, at a certain point, the object may not be visible in the image. If you take a very thin sheet of metal and put it on the X-ray table, and then you have a thick object also and put it on the X-ray table and take a picture, the thick object will attenuate more than the thin object, and the thick object will give you more contrast. But at some point, the contrast will be so small, less than the just noticeable difference of 2% I mentioned earlier, that the thin object will not be visible. So there are phantoms where you have objects of varying thickness in the image. You are shown the image and you are asked to tell which object can you detect and which objects you know what is present in the phantom. You know the thickness is 3, 2, 1, 0.5, 0.2 and so on millimeters. At some point you say, I cannot see anything beyond these objects. This particular object, I cannot see anything thinner than this. And that is because the contrast is less than the just noticeable difference. So the threshold object thickness is determined. What is the thinnest coin or object that you can detect in the X-ray image? And this is done with radiologists. And low contrast is, the threshold contrast is determined where the viewer, the radiologist, could visually detect the objects with a 50% confidence level. And that means you show the image a number of times, and if at least half of the experiments the radiologist detects a particular object, you say it is detectable with 50% confidence. Then you get what is called this contrast detail curve, where the vertical axis is the threshold object thickness in millimeters that is detected in the image. You could translate that to contrast if you wish on the image, but physically, in the phantom, it is translated to the thickness of the object. The x-axis here is the size of the object in millimeters, such as the diameter if it is a circular object. So as the object becomes smaller and smaller and the thickness is reduced, at some point you cannot see the object. So depending upon the system that you want to analyze, there will be different curves here. A thick object can be readily seen for a small object. Just a minute. Okay. Here we have the thickness, I'm sorry, the size going from 1 to 20 millimeters. And here on the vertical axis, the threshold thickness going from 0.2 to 5 millimeters. This curve says that as the thickness is reduced, the object is detected up to a certain size. And this is the digital image intensifier television image, and this is the screen film. The lower the thickness for a given object size, the better the system is. So for a given thickness, given size of the object, let's say 10 millimeters, you can detect it at a thickness of 0.6 millimeters here, whereas with the digital system, it has to be the same object of 10 millimeters diameter has to have a 1 millimeter thickness to be detected. That means the screen film system is performing better than the image intensifier TV-based system. So by comparing the imaging systems in this manner, based upon how visible the objects are to an expert in the domain of application, and by drawing these curves, you can make a decision as to which imaging system is better suited for that particular application. So here you're not drawing the MTF, but the information is present in the form of the object size that is increasing here. As the object becomes bigger and bigger, then you're having more and more low frequency component, or opposite, as the object becomes smaller and smaller, coming backwards on the horizontal axis, there is more and more high frequency component present. So it's not exactly the spectrum or MTF, but something else that relates to the size of the object, the thickness of the object, and how efficiently it could be detected, in this case with at least a 50% efficiency of detection by an expert in the area. So rather than the area under the MTF curve, you could switch to some other mode of evaluation in this manner. Now coming back to MTF, here is another example of various detectors for direct digital mammography. SF is screen film. Indirect represents an indirect digital system where it is scanned using the charged phosphor plate. A direct digital system is based upon this amorphous selenium detector, which is abbreviated as ASE. The amorphous selenium detector is doing the best. 0 to 10 cycles per millimeter of spatial frequency and normalized MTF with maximum gain of 1. The indirect digital system has an area less than that for the screen film, so it is worse than screen film. But the amorphous selenium detector is doing even better than screen film. So of these three, the best system is the amorphous selenium detector in terms of the area under the MTF. Okay? One of the interesting papers I have seen evaluated the MTF of a microcomputer tomography system. And the authors from France, they used... Let me just see, make sure that I'm talking about that. Yeah, this one. They observed the MTF to have the value of 0.1 at 55 line pairs per millimeter. It's very high. They considered the threshold of 0.1 on the MTF. And they took that frequency and inverted it and calculated the equivalent spatial resolution to be 2 times 55, which is that limit, inverse, and they took that to indicate the spatial resolution as 9 micrometers. And the way they computed this is what I explained earlier, using the edge spread function. So they created a phantom of an edge, such as a box like this with a perfect edge, and took an image of that. So when you scan across the box or the edge, you get this. Ideally, it would have been a step function, but instead you get a smooth step function. And that is the edge spread function. This is distance in microns. Micron is like slang for micrometer. 0 to 100 micrometers. And you take the derivative of this, which is this. The derivative of the edge spread function is the line spread function, which looks like a Gaussian. And from the line spread function, they took the Fourier transform and rotated and so on, and this is the MTF. If you just take the Fourier transform of this, you get one slice of the MTF. And it is assumed to be isotropic, so you just take this and spin around in 2D, you get the MTF. But we said if it is isotropic, you have to show the MTF only for positive frequencies for one radial slice. So this is from 0 to 120 line pairs per millimeter, and 0.1 threshold goes up to 55, somewhere there, 55 line pairs per millimeter, which translates to a good resolution of 9 micrometers per pixel. And this is for microcomputer tomography. And using a synchrotron. So in a synchrotron, if you have heard about a synchrotron, you have a big building with a big circular chamber. And in that chamber, you have a large current of electrons running at very high acceleration, voltage applied of a mega volt or something. And you have a fairly large current running in space. And the building could be about the oval where the electron beam runs could be about 100 meters by 50 meters or so. And at certain points along this contour or this chamber, the direction of the electron beam is changed, and when the electron beam is bent, there'll be radiation emitted. The electron beam is not struck onto a target, but instead, just by bending the electron beam, the accelerated electron beam, it'll release energy in the form of electromagnetic radiation in a broad spectrum. In Canada, in Saskatoon, we have a synchrotron, and that is called the Canadian Light Source. What is emitted is called light. In the general sense, light is electromagnetic wave, and we have broad spectrum of radiation from the sun. But what is emitted here is beyond visible light. It'll be X-rays and other forms of electromagnetic radiation in a wide band. You could filter that and get the radiation of frequency of your interest, and what you could generate is a monochromatic X-ray beam. And using that X-ray beam, you could have a sample. You get an X-ray beam that comes out, which is just one line of X-rays. You could have a sample, and you have to mount the sample on a turntable and then use the X-ray beam to scan it to just get a projection, or rotate it and get projections at all angles. And then you can compute the three-dimensional representation of the object, typically small objects, with a resolution of the order of what they got is 9 micrometers, but using synchrotrons, it is possible to get resolution of the order of 3 to 5 micrometers per pixel for small samples. So that is the MTF of a synchrotron-based microcomputer tomography system. And the same principles that we discussed so far have been applied here in practice. Now, when you have an image that is affected by noise, and let us consider additive noise, the observed image GXY is the original image FXY plus eta XY, where eta represents random noise, and it's been added to the image. And let's assume that the two processes, the image and noise processes, are statistically independent, which means they're uncorrelated too. If you take the mean of G is equal to mean of F plus mean of eta. And typically you assume the mean of the noise process to be zero. In most cases, noise samples are equally distributed around the zero value. So you would have mu eta equal to zero. So the mean of the output image or the observed image is typically expected to be equal to the mean of the original image, either on the entire image or even in small windows. The variance, on the other hand, the variance of the observed image is equal to the variance of the original plus the variance of noise. Variance is like averaged power, and the power of the observed image will be equal to the power or energy of the original image plus that of noise. Then, to define the signal-to-noise ratio, there are a few different possibilities. If you're interested in a power-based measure or variance-based measure, then you could take the variance of the original image as a ratio with respect to variance of the noise. And because this includes squaring, You take the log of that and 10 times that, and you get a signal-to-noise ratio. If you don't square it here, you would put 20 here. That is based on signal processing and communication systems where you use power. The variance of noise may be estimated by computing the variance in a region of the observed image where you know no image components exist. If you're taking the X-ray image of a patient and the patient is here, let's say, this part of the image may be only background noise. Another part could be only background noise. So by design of the experimental situation, you may know that a certain part of the image will always contain the image information or the signal information of interest, and certain parts do not contain any object, and what is there would be only noise, because the noise is additive. Then, by computing the variance in such blank areas, or what is expected to be blank, you get the variance of the noise. The variance of the signal, you may have to measure from models of the probability density function of the source. And of course, even this, if you know the probability density function of the source and a scale factor for the actual power, you could compute this from the probability density function. Now, in signal processing, that is commonly used. In image processing, the variance may not be of interest. Instead, the dynamic range is of interest. The maximum minus minimum is a better indicator of the range of variation of an image than the variance. Whereas for a random variable, the range is not important, but the variance is important, or the standard deviation, which is the square root of the variance. So there is another signal-to-noise ratio that is based on the dynamic range or operating range of the image, max minus min, divided by the standard deviation, and you take the log of that, and because these are amplitude values, you multiply by 20 to convert to power. Now, there are special purpose monitors for the display of medical images that give signal to noise ratio or have signal to noise ratio in the range of 60 to 70 dB. Some 30, 40 years ago, 40 dB was considered to be very good quality of video signal in analog TV transmission and display on TV monitors. But nowadays, 70, 80 dB is considered to be acceptable and practically achievable in image display systems. And this can be achieved at a non-interlaced frame repetition rate of 70 to 80 frames per second with images that have 5 to 6 or even 10 million pixels. There are special purpose monitors which can display 5 megapixels or 6 or 7 megapixels nowadays on cathode ray tube monitors, or also nowadays on LCD monitors of that size, with a high signal-to-noise ratio of about 60-70 dB and non-interlaced displaying all of those pixels at 70 or 80 frames per second, so you get a very steady display, not 30 frames a second. Contrast-to-noise ratio is another measure that combines the contrast or visibility or the simultaneous contrast of objects and signal-to-noise ratio. So you could take two regions, one of an object of interest and another background, and take the average of the pixel values in those regions and subtract them, mu f minus mu b. F is the foreground, b is the background. F is the foreground or the object of interest, such as a part of the phantom image where you have the object that you want to detect. B, background, need not be the immediate surrounding area. It could be somewhere else in the image. It doesn't matter. It has to be a part of the image where there is no signal. That is the background fog or background level in the image. You take the difference, and if they are normalized, that is contrast. If they are not normalized, you must divide by something. And you could divide this by sigma B, which is the standard deviation of the background. So if this is the object of interest, let's say this character, you measure the mean of that, and then you take background to be that part of the image, take a number of pixels there, measure the mean and the standard deviation of the background, and you compare the difference as a ratio to the standard deviation of the background. The background could be noise, or it could be just some background density that is present in the image due to the imaging parameters and system used. So the background region need not be the immediate surrounding region around the object of interest. It could be somewhere else in the image. And it is suited for X-ray imaging systems. The density of a region of interest on an image depends upon the X-ray dose. And the visibility of an object depends upon both the dose and noise. If the noise is high, you must put more X-ray energy so the object appears with better contrast. The visibility of an object in an X-ray image also depends upon its thickness and how much attenuation the X-ray beam experiences in passing through the object. A very thin object will cast a very faint shadow. A thick object will cast a shadow with high contrast. If you reduce the number of photons of X-rays used, that is, reduce the milliampere second, MAS product, the result will be noisy. So you have to take all of these into account, and it is possible to compute this measure that will account for all of these factors. There are some error-based measures where if you have two images, one that is the original and the second that is an observed image with the effect of noise or degradation that your system has applied or has caused, you may compare the two images in this manner. FMN minus GMN square summed over all pixels and normalized by the area or the number of pixels. Now, this is not a signal-to-noise ratio, but if you take this difference, that is like noise. If G is F plus eta, then G minus F is eta, the noise that was added, if it is additive noise. So this is noise power, and if you divide it by some normalizing factor related to the signal power, then it is a kind of noise-to-signal ratio, or you can invert it, you get signal-to-noise ratio. If you don't want to take the reference, then just this gives you the mean squared error of one image with respect to another. The difference could be caused by blurring, noise, it doesn't matter what it is. There is some difference, and that is the mean squared error. You could normalize, if you wish, by the total energy of the original image. There is another normalized error where instead of squaring, you take the absolute value. The Laplacian mean squared error says, don't compare the original images, but compare the Laplacian of one image with the Laplacian of the other. By taking the Laplacian, you are extracting the edges. You are comparing only the edge in regions because the background intensity is removed. So this form of the difference will remove the dependence of the other errors on the actual intensity, because intensity differences don't matter. If there is a scale factor between the two, then these other error values will give you a large value. A scale factor here will have no effect. So normalization with reference to a scale factor is achieved by taking the Laplacian, and emphasis is placed on edge-related information. There is an error known as perceptual mean squared error, which is similar to the Laplacian mean squared error, but with each image replaced by not the Laplacian, but some other filtered version of the image. And the filter is a point spread function that simulates or represents the human visual system. HVS is the human visual system. So a filter that simulates the effect of the human visual system is applied to the images, and then the results are compared, like in the Laplacian mean squared error, and that is known as perceptual MSE, mean squared error. All of these error measures Assume that you have the original image and the degraded image or some other processed version. So you compare before and after something has happened to the image. So the effect of what happened in between is what is represented by these measures. But if you have only one image and no reference, then these measures cannot be applied. I'll come to this later on. It's 1 o'clock now. Let's take a break and we'll meet at 2 o'clock.